Inside the Vatican, Gunther Glick was walking on air as he followed the Camerlengo from the Sistine Chapel. Glick and Macri had just made the live transmission of the decade. Now, out in the hallway, the Camerlengo turned to Glick and Macri. "I have asked the Swiss Guard to assemble photos for you. Photos of the branded cardinals, as well as one of his late holiness."
"Are you sure?"
Glick asked, trying to keep the excitement from his voice. The Camerlengo nodded. "The Swiss Guard will also provide you a live video feed of the antimatter canister as it counts down." Glick stared.
"Christmas.
The Illuminati are about to find out," the Camerlengo declared, "that they have grossly overplayed their hand." The Hashashin smiled as he pulled his van into the mammoth stone structure overlooking the Tiber River. He carried his prize up and up, spiraling higher in the stone tunnel, grateful his load was slender. Inside, he placed her on a plush divan. Then he expertly bound her arms behind her back and tied her feet. He knew that what he longed for would have to wait until his final task was finished. Water. Leaving his prize unconscious on the couch, the Hashashin went downstairs into a torchlit dungeon. The final task. He walked to the table and revered the sacred metal forms that had been left there for him. Water. It was his last. Removing a torch from the wall, as he had done 3 times already, he began heating the end. When the end of the object was white hot, he carried it to the cell. Inside, a single man stood in silence, old and alone.
"Cardinal Baja," the killer hissed, "have you prayed yet?"
The Italian's eyes were fearless.
"Only for your soul."
The 6 Pompieri firemen who responded to the fire at the Church of Santa Maria della Vittoria extinguished the bonfire with blasts of halon gas. The execution in this church was something none of them would ever forget. Part crucifixion, part hanging, part burning at the stake, the scene was something dredged from a Gothic nightmare. Unfortunately, the press, as usual, had arrived before the fire department. They'd shot plenty of video before the Pompieri cleared the church. When the firemen finally cut the victim down and laid him on the floor, there was no doubt who the man was.
"Cardinale Guidera," one whispered. "Di Barcelona."
The chief of the firemen recognized the 2nd victim immediately, the austere commander of the Swiss Guard. The chief called the Vatican, but all the circuits were busy. He knew it didn't matter. The Swiss Guard would hear about this on television in a matter of minutes. Then he saw Langdon on the floor, apparently alive.
"Medico!" he screamed. "Medico!"
"Any word from Olivetti?"
the Camerlengo asked, looking drained as Rocher escorted him back from the Sistine Chapel to the Pope's office.
"No, signore. I am fearing the worst."
When they reached the Pope's office, the Camerlengo's voice was heavy.
"Captain, there is nothing more I can do here tonight. I do not wish to be disturbed. The rest is in God's hands."
"Yes, signore."
"The hour is late, Captain.
At exactly 11:15 p.m., if the church is still in peril, I want you to evacuate the cardinals. I am putting their safety in your hands."
"Very good, signore. And you? Shall I come for you at 11:15 as well?"
"There will be no need. I will leave when the spirit moves me."
As Rocher headed down the hall away from the Pope's office, a guard appeared running toward him. Even by candlelight, Rocher recognized Lieutenant Chartrand, young, green, and eager.
"Captain!"
Chartrand called, holding out a cellular phone.
"I think the Camerlengo's address may have worked. We've got a caller here who says he has information that can help us." He phoned on one of the Vatican's private extensions. I have no idea how he got the number.
Rocher stopped. What?
He will only speak to the ranking officer.
Any word from Olivetti?
No, sir.
He took the receiver. This is Captain Rocher. I am ranking officer here. Rocher, the voice said, I will explain to you who I am. Then I will tell you what you are going to do next. When the caller stopped talking and hung up, Rocher stood stunned. He now knew from whom he was taking orders. At CERN, when the private line on the director's desk began to ring, Kohler's secretary, Sylvie Baudeloc, jumped. Nobody had that number. She answered,
Yes?
Miss Baudeloc, this is Director Kohler. Contact my pilot. My jet is to be ready in 5 minutes.
Langdon was still standing near the main altar with the fire chief and a few of his men. They had been rattling him with questions. Langdon wasn't listening. He had questions of his own. A fireman approached Langdon across the church.
I checked again, sir. The only bodies we found are Cardinal Guidera and the Swiss Guard commander. There's no sign of a woman here.
Grazie,
Langdon said, unsure whether he was relieved or horrified. He felt an unexpected emptiness inside. In Vittoria's absence, he felt something he had not felt in years. Loneliness. The pain gave him strength. Pushing all else from his mind, he mustered his concentration. The last altar of science, Langdon thought. The killer had one final task. Earth, air, fire, water. He looked at his watch. 30 minutes. Langdon moved past the fireman toward Bernini's Ecstasy of St. Teresa. This time, as he stared at Bernini's marker, Langdon had no doubt what he was looking for. Let angels guide you on your lofty quest. Directly over the recumbent saint, against a backdrop of gilded flame, hovered Bernini's angel. The angel's hand clutched a pointed spear of fire. Langdon's eyes followed the direction of the shaft, arcing toward the right side of the church. His eyes hit the wall. He scanned the spot where the spear was pointing. There was nothing there. Langdon knew, of course, the spear was pointing far beyond the wall, into the night, somewhere across Rome.
What direction is that?
Langdon asked, turning and addressing the fire chief with a newfound determination.
Direction?
The chief glanced where Langdon was pointing. He sounded confused.
I don't know. West, I think.
Langdon frowned. I need a city map, right away. The chief sent someone running out to the fire truck for a map. 2 minutes later, the man was back and handed Langdon the map. Langdon thanked him and spread it out on the altar. Surveying the whole of Rome, his eyes touched down on the three churches where the first three cardinals had been killed. The Chigi Chapel, St. Peter's, here. Seeing them all laid out before him now, Langdon noted an oddity in their locations. They seemed to be separated systematically in an enormous city-wide triangle.
So where the hell is water?
Langdon looked for a fourth point, a square, perhaps. Although a square made no symbolic sense, squares were symmetrical, at least. But then something unexpected happened. He noticed that the line he drew to indicate the direction of the angel's spear passed perfectly through one of the possibilities. Stupefied, he circled that point with a ballpoint pen he borrowed from the fireman. It lay dead center of Rome's famed Piazza Navona. Langdon knew the piazza contained a major church, but to the best of his knowledge, it contained no Bernini works. The church was called St. Agnes in Agony, named for St. Agnes, a ravishing teenage virgin banished to a life of sexual slavery for refusing to renounce her faith.
There must be something in that church.
The answer took another 30 seconds to hit him, but when it did, Langdon felt an exhilaration like nothing he had ever experienced in his academic career. The Illuminati genius, it seemed, would never cease.
Of course, the Illuminati believe in opposites.
Connecting opposite vertices of the locations with his pen, Langdon's fingers started trembling. There before him on the map was a giant cruciform. It's a cross. The four elements of science unfolded before his eyes, sprawled across Rome in an enormous city-wide cross. As he stared in wonder, a line of poetry rang in his mind, like an old friend with a new face. Cross Rome, the mystic elements unfold. The fog began to clear. Langdon saw that the answer had been in front of him all night. The Illuminati poem had been telling him how the altars were laid out. A cross. The cruciform on the map, Langdon realized, was the ultimate Illuminati duality. Galileo's path of illumination was a tribute to both science and God. The rest of the puzzle fell into place almost immediately. Piazza Navona. Dead center of Piazza Navona, outside the Church of St. Agnes in Agony, Bernini had forged one of his most celebrated sculptures. Everyone who came to Rome went to see it. The Fountain of the Four Rivers. Water, Langdon thought. The final marker. It was perfect. Leaving at least one confused fireman in his wake, Langdon ran across the church in the direction of Olivetti's lifeless body. 10:31 p.m., he thought. Plenty of time. It was the first instant all day that Langdon felt ahead of the game. Kneeling beside Olivetti, out of sight behind some pews, Langdon discreetly took possession of the commander's semi-automatic and walkie-talkie. He then slipped out the door and skirted the press, who were now entering the church in droves. He crossed Piazza Barberini. In the shadows, he turned on the walkie-talkie. He tried to hail Vatican City, but heard nothing but static. Abruptly, he realized his plan to get help was not going to work. He spun, looking for a payphone. None. Vatican circuits were jammed anyway. He was alone. Sensing options and minutes slipping away, Langdon made his decision. Pulling the gun from his pocket, he committed an act so out of character that he suspected his soul must now be possessed. Running over to a lone Citroen sedan idling at a stoplight, Langdon pointed the weapon through the driver's open window.
"Fuori!" he yelled.
The trembling man got out. Langdon jumped behind the wheel and hit the gas. Gunther Glick sat on a bench in a holding tank inside the office of the Swiss Guard. Macri was beside him, looking a little bit stunned. Glick didn't blame her. He knew the conversation on which he had just reported was not intended for his ears. But this was his moment in the sun. Another Glick scoop. "The 11th hour Samaritan," Macri groaned on the bench beside him, clearly unimpressed. Glick smiled. "Brilliant, wasn't it?"
"Brilliantly dumb."
"She's just jealous," Glick knew. Shortly after the Camerlengo's address, Glick had again, by chance, been in the right place at the right time. He'd overheard Rocher giving new orders to his men. Apparently, Rocher had received a phone call from a mysterious individual who Rocher claimed had critical information regarding the current crisis. Rocher was talking as if this man could help them, and was advising his guards to prepare for the guest's arrival. Although the information was clearly private, Glick had acted as any dedicated reporter would, without honor. He'd found a dark corner, ordered Macri to fire up a remote camera, and he'd reported the news. Nights in Rome, like those in the desert, can be surprisingly cool, even after a warm day. Langdon was huddled now on the fringes of Piazza Navona, pulling his jacket around him. He checked his watch. 15 minutes. He was grateful for a few moments of rest. The piazza was deserted. Bernini's masterful fountain sizzled before him with a fearful sorcery. The foaming pool sent a magical mist upward, lit from beneath by underwater floodlights. At 10:46 p.m., a black van emerged from the alleyway on the far side of the piazza. Langdon would not have given it a second look, except that the van drove with no headlights. Like a shark patrolling a moonlit bay, the vehicle circled the perimeter of the piazza. Langdon hunkered lower, crouched in the shadows beside the large stairway leading up to the Church of St. Agnes in Agony. He gazed out at the piazza, his pulse climbing. After making two complete circuits, the van banked inward toward Bernini's fountain. It pulled abreast of the basin, moving laterally along the rim until its side was flush with the fountain. Then it parked, its sliding door positioned only inches above the churning water. Mist billowed. Suddenly, the van's side door slid open. On the floor of the van, contorted in agony, lay a naked man. The man was wrapped in yards of heavy chains. He thrashed against the iron links, but the chains were too heavy. One of the links bisected the man's mouth like a horse's bit, stifling his cries for help. It was then that Langdon saw the second figure, moving around behind the prisoner in the dark, as though making final preparations. Langdon knew he had only seconds to act. Taking the gun, he slipped off his jacket and dropped it on the ground. Circling the perimeter of the fountain, he positioned himself directly opposite the van. Then he climbed over the rim and dropped into the foaming pool. The water was waist-deep and like ice. Langdon gritted his teeth and plowed through the water. The bottom was slippery, made doubly treacherous by a stratum of coins thrown for good luck. Langdon reached the interior of the fountain and circled back to his left. The van was only 15 feet away. Langdon raised his gun and stepped out of the mist, feeling like some sort of aquatic cowboy making a final stand. "Don't move." His voice was steadier than the gun. The Hashashin looked up. For a moment he seemed confused, as though he had seen a ghost. Then his lips curled into an evil smile. He raised his arms in submission.
"And so it goes.
Get out of the van. I won't hesitate to shoot."
"You've already hesitated."
Langdon felt his finger tighten on the trigger. The Cardinal lay motionless now. He looked exhausted, moribund.
"Untie him. Forget him. You've come for the woman. Do not pretend otherwise."
Langdon fought the urge to end it right there.
"Where is she?" "Somewhere safe, awaiting my return."